How fast and how well do you think? And what does that mean today for your dementia risk in the future? A new study shows cognitive speed training can reduce your risk for dementia. That study appears in the journal Alzheimer's and Dementia Translational Research and Clinical Interventions. Well, working on brain health can also be good for your business. Tiffany Haft runs Mind Matters in Aberdeen, and she is presenting at SDCEO's 7th Annual Women's Business Conference. More about that in a moment. I talked with Tiffany Haft about her business, about what our grandmothers understood about mindfulness, and the big impact of early intervention when it comes to cognitive decline.
As a business owner who works on brain health, for about the first 2 years of starting up my business, I did not take very good care of my own brain, even though that literally is my business. Listening to my own story of how Minds Matter got up and going, but also giving some brain health tips, getting all of these women coming to this to understand that their brain is their business. 2 out of 3 people with Alzheimer's are women. And so during this process of building their business, they need to prioritize taking care of them, because otherwise nobody's going to be there to take care of them later on.
Yeah. How did you start thinking of yourself as a small business owner?
It's been an interesting process. You know, I grew up on a farm, and small town farm girl with a great community that taught me to care a lot about my community. Growing up on a farm taught me a lot of resilience and never to give up, because the cattle always need to be fed. When I went to college, I very much valued that education. I knew how much it cost. I really loved learning, and I really wanted to help people. And so as a speech pathologist, that's what I did. And then in 2012, I had West Nile. When I had West Nile, I had brain fog. Amazing physicians, but I would tell them about the brain fog and they would say, it's just going to get better, give it time. It led me to looking at how I do therapy a lot differently, because you would never ever have your knee replaced and have a doctor tell you, just give it a year and it's going to be better. And so I started looking at clinics and what to do with the earlier stages of cognition, because that's what I was noticing. Nobody else noticed that I had problems, but I could see I couldn't organize. I couldn't pay attention. And so I really dug into, you know, becoming board certified in neurofeedback. I became a brain injury specialist. I went to all these different clinics throughout the country just to learn, mainly at that time, selfishly for myself.
Yeah.
But then when COVID came along, I was like, hey, I was born for this. Like, this is everything I've been doing, and I know what to do to help these people. But it didn't really exist in a clinic setting that was, you know, currently existing at that time. And so it led to starting Minds Matter, because I want to get ahead of brain health, not just deal with people once they have dementia.
Right. And we could talk about Alzheimer's and dementia all day, and it would be so useful to listeners. And you do that work too. But I want to go back to something that you said about you could tell that there was something going on with your brain that other people maybe didn't have a problem with, like, you're fine, it will get better. I think the stereotype is often that, you know, you'll notice some cognitive decline in your mother because she's forgetting her car keys, and when are we going to, how long are we going to let her drive? And I feel like people, that's a familiar story. But if it's just you forgetting your doctor's appointments or you not being able to organize your desk, there seems to be less support for that.
You're right. It's called subjective cognitive decline. So when you look at it, there's stages to memory loss. Subjective cognitive decline is where you can tell something's different. Nobody else really can pick up on it, but you know you're having a harder time coming up with words. You're losing focus. You're interrupting people in conversations, or you might not be able to keep place. And that comes before mild cognitive decline, where your spouse, your children might pick up that there's a few slips here and there. And then there's dementia, where everybody kind of knows that there's a lot going on cognitively with you.
Do you see a lot of maybe young adults or people who are also, once they're out of the home or out of college, at trying to identify things that might, do I have ADHD? Do I have problems with executive function? Or maybe it's a football player who had a concussion and is wondering post-college whether that's affecting them or not. What about younger adults who are kind of trying to figure out, how does my brain work?
It is fun. It's been, you know, 2.5 years of me speaking at everything possible just to get people to understand what I do at Minds Matter and getting people to understand that you can always work on your brain. There's this thing called neuroplasticity. Your brain can always rewire. And we are, I would say in the last year, getting a lot more of those slight concussions or the person who write, like they think they have ADHD, when in reality, it's just a poor attention span that they never really learned how to control when they were in school. And it's just, you know, continuing on throughout their life. So we're seeing a lot more of those earlier stages. And it's a lot of fun, especially the younger the person. They come in 3 or 4 times with us and they learn how to use their brain, and it just completely changes their future.
All right. How do we learn about our own brain and how to use it? What are some early steps?
The early steps are, first, you come in for an assessment. We look at, you know, a cognitive communication assessment. I'm a speech language pathologist by trade, and I have an occupational therapist. And we do a very thorough cognitive assessment and really focus in a lot on attention, being able to dual task, executive function. And we really just pick apart, here's where you have deficits. And then we pair that together with this weird thing called a quantitative EEG, where I put a cap on your head that looks like a swim cap. I am looking at how your brain works compared to thousands of people in your age range, and also looking at how your heart and nervous system pair up while you're doing thinking tasks, and then put all that information together and say, okay, if I am to look in the, you know, crystal ball 20, 30 years ahead of time, I'm going to look at this attention span is going to catch up with you, or you have great visual memory, but your auditory memory isn't so hot. Let's do some exercises that work on that. Here's the strategy behind it. We give homework, you know, we expect you to work outside of therapy and really change a lot of things in your life. But when you put in the work, it pays back with a lot of results.
What's working against us in the culture right now for our brain health?
What's not working against us? I look at, there's so many factors. Phones, you know, they get the bad rap, but it's really, we in our daily life don't have time where we're bored anymore. There's a lot of value in deep work. And in the culture we're in right now, we don't have those quiet moments. I always go back to looking at farming. You know, my grandpa, when he farmed, he'd cultivate corn on the M. There was no radio. It was him and the corn. And if he screwed up, everybody knew. But in that moment, it's meditation. It's deep focus. And now I look at my brother that farms, and he pulls out the sprayer and puts it on auto steer. And he's marketing cattle on one phone, selling beans on the other phone. And there's just not that quiet moment. So our nervous system never has that time to de-stress. It's really hard on our brains.
So in your career then, that neurofeedback, those scan results that you're getting, can you see that change? Can you see, are we all changing collectively, or is this so individualized?
It's very individualized. I am very fortunate to have a lot of people who are aging well in front of me lately, 70 to 95 year olds that are just coming in kind of for a brain health baseline. And so when I get a 95 year old in my office that is scoring within normal limits on everything, it turns into more of an interview process with me.
Yeah.
Those 95 year olds have a lot of things in common. They are not on any medications. They don't have high blood pressure, high cholesterol. It's not because they're ignoring it and not taking the medication. They just have never developed those. But they all take time for prayer, mindfulness, community, you know, all of the things that we know we should be doing. When you get to see somebody like that and interview them, it really checks out that, yes, taking care of our brain really pays off.
So it's not downloading an app or doing a crossword puzzle every day, or are there habits? Are there daily habits that are going to create longevity in your brain health, or even just maximum potential in your brain health on a day-to-day basis, especially if you're running a business?
There are the number one habit, you know, people come in and ask about different supplements, things like that, which there's some that I like, but they'll be looking for the needle in the haystack. And I'm saying, well, if you exercise, that's a 40% reduction in risk of dementia right there.
Okay.
You know, getting blood flow, but also people who have mindfulness scheduled into the day. You know, we tend to run from thing to thing lately and not give our brain a break. At having a habit of taking a breath is so good for our brain.
When you say mindfulness throughout the day, what does that mean? If it's not baked into our jobs like it used to be, and for some people it might be. It might be, you know, part of their day is a very mindful, meditative kind of thing, whatever that is, reading or working or planting. If it's not baked into our day, how much is enough? What does it look like in our lives?
There are all sorts of studies on the minimum effective dose. You know, what's the bare minimum of mindfulness that you need? Right. We're all looking at, like, how do I game this system? How do I do the least and get the most bang for my buck? 12 minutes is the gold standard for mindfulness.
Wow.
But I tell people, can you aim for 60 seconds an hour? You know, can you, like, I just walked out of my office to the bathroom. I didn't pick up my phone. I counted the steps. It's about 100 steps. So it was 1, 2, 3, 4, just focusing on those numbers for 100 steps. It's really calming. It's good for the nervous system. So throughout the day, I probably get my 12 minutes. But it's hard to, in a perfect world, yes, we would take the time to do the 1 hour meditation class, but a lot of us don't have that.
Is it 12 minutes of meditating, of doing nothing, or can it be 12 minutes of doing dishes in the silence of your own mind?
It's 12 minutes of, exactly. It can be 12 minutes of coloring.
Okay.
It can be, you look at knitting and crocheting. Mm-hmm. Great grandma had it right. You know, you crochet, but not with the TV on.
Yeah.
Not while the evening news is firing up your nervous system. It's 12 minutes of intense focus.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier in our conversation about, you know, delaying, you know, so this is going to go away. Let's go back to an Alzheimer's or dementia or something that we think about with aging. And you go in and you get that baseline, and say the provider says, you know, come back in a year. Yeah, we're seeing some issues, but come back in 6 months, come back from in a year. And that makes you uncomfortable because you think, well, a lot can happen in that year. A lot of decline can happen in that year. How can people advocate for themselves to get a little more of what we're talking about here, a little more assessment, you know, especially if they don't live in Aberdeen, for example?
We have excellent providers. We have excellent neurologists in the States and physicians, but that is my frustration, where we have patients from Aberdeen that get that appointment with the neurologist in Sioux Falls or Fargo. Well, it might take 6 months to get that appointment. Mm-hmm. And then they go there and they say, wow, you have mild cognitive impairment. You have early stage dementia. Here's a pill. Come back in a year and let's see if it's worse. Well, what's going to happen in that year, right? Like, you've just been given a diagnosis of dementia. You are worried about your brain, but you don't have a coach on your side.
Yeah.
If your family and you can advocate to ask for orders for speech therapy, for occupational therapy, those are really good pieces to the puzzle. Talk about getting counselors, psychologists on board, so you can kind of process the emotions of going through that diagnosis as well. But the physicians, you know, we tend to have a pill for every ill kind of concept when it comes to healthcare. Here's a pill for this. Mm-hmm. When in reality, I look at our brains and say, what if we give it a purpose and teach us how to maximize as many neurons as possible in the next year? We actually have a lot of patients from here that go back to that annual appointment and they're better than they were a year ago.
Oh, wow. How do things like, and I'm thinking specifically measuring in a neurofeedback kind of way, can you see and measure things like anxiety and an overstimulated brain or a PTSD brain. Help me understand what you're looking for when you put that little swim cap on and do an assessment. What kind of visual feedback are you getting as a clinician?
Right. What I'm looking for are reversible factors when I'm doing that quantitative EEG. So when I look at a brain, we make four different main types of waves. And so I'll look at a brain and say, is this brain overstimulated? Are we looking at inflammation possibly being a cause for this brain not working the way? Or is it anxiety? We look at heart rate variability, how the heart works with the brain during cognitive tasks. And in that case where it's overstimulation and anxiety and inattention, we do look at sometimes using neurofeedback, which is retraining the brain how to slow down those waves. And we also work with them and their physicians to look at, is sleep part of this? Is it stress? Is it depression? Is it sometimes if it's the other end where the brain's not receiving enough information, is it blood flow? When I look at a brain underproducing beta waves are the fast waves we use for thinking. Well, if we have a brain that looks really blue, so to speak, not producing enough of those fast level waves, then it becomes conversations of, can you visit with your physician about your heart health? Or how does blood sugar play into this? Are you getting enough exercise? And just really encouraging them to have better conversations with their healthcare providers about how to look at all of those pieces that they can manage with their healthcare too.
One of the big takeaways I'm getting from you here is that you don't have to accept a decline and just say, oh, I'm getting older. I mean, there are things in life you have to accept. I'm not saying nothing, but that these questions and finding the right provider might make a world of difference in the future for a loved one or for yourself.
It really does. We have people that make big changes no matter what level they're at. So we have people come in that are diagnosed with dementia. One of my favorite, you know, a picture is worth a thousand words. In my hallway is three canvases. And it's somebody that came to us with a diagnosis of dementia. But when she came in, I always encourage their loved ones to be in the therapy room with me. And when she came in, we visited with her husband about different ways to communicate with her, be more encouraging, not pointing out, you didn't remember that. We also worried, like in her case, what lights her up every day? What's something that makes her smile, have a meaning, you know, in her life, have purpose? And in this case, she was an artist. And he brought a piece of her before artwork. And the first day she worked with me, I had her draw a cat, and it was very stick figure-ish. Mm-hmm. But with working with him getting to understand that he needs to encourage her and how to get a smile from her every day and put pictures in front of her, 3 months later, her artwork is unbelievable. And she had the diagnosis of Alzheimer's, of dementia. So I always tell people, you know, if that brain can make a difference, yours absolutely can. Like, you never give up on things.
Yeah. I saw you hold up those pictures in a podcast interview that you did. So I'll put a link up on our website so people can link to that podcast interview and see those images, because I thought they were quite striking as well. I'm like, that's, you think about looking at the brain waves or the numbers, but to look at the output of an artist after working with you, it's pretty incredible.
And yeah, we are very blessed. We always have the hardest workers come in our door. Mm-hmm. But when we give them a purpose and we get their family on board understanding what we're doing, it's really incredible what you can do. You know, we used to have this misconception that after a stroke, you have 1 year to make recovery. And after that, you know, it is what it is. And we're proving that wrong all the time here. Just because once you get people to understand, give your brain a purpose, get it to work, and then you have your family on board, it makes a difference.
How did you make those changes to prioritize yourself? Because you mentioned, you know, this idea of, you know, you're putting other people's brain health first and you're breaking your own brain. And maybe those are the people around you because you want to help, you want to give, and this is your own practice. what are some ways that you reshifted that and reprioritized your own brain health in the midst of some really tough times?
2026 has been the year where I said it's time, or else I'm going to be on the other side of the table really darn quick.
Wow.
And I did this by selfishly creating this empowerment project that we're doing here in Aberdeen, and 40 women signed up. They all came in and did preventative brain health scans, and we're all getting together once a month, but we all have habit trackers. We all have little basic habits that we are working on every day to improve our brain. But in reality, it's holding myself accountable too. I'm focusing on exercise. I'm focusing on cutting back the sugar and, you know, trying to build in that mindfulness for myself, trying to actually read books I enjoy instead of just neuroscience books all the time. So it's starting to, as Minds Matter has settled into what the business is going to be, it's allowing me some time to focus on making sure that I'm able to stay on the right side of the table.
Yeah. I love that you brought 40 other women together to say, let's do this. Let's hack our brains a little bit in a positive way. We joined the gym with accountability partners. It's fairly common for us to be in a group of people who are taking care of their heart health or dealing with depression. Why not brain health?
And it is a really fun group of intelligent women. And they all are bringing each time a little bit of information that they're reading on and they're learning about. But when women start hearing that we need to ask our doctors about estrogen, we need to really pay attention to blood sugar early on, not once we're diabetic. Blood pressure really matters. All of these things, once we become educated on it, we become better patients. But the ripple effect that's going to happen through our community is you turn 40 women loose, their spouses get, you know, raised up during the process, their children do, their friends, because women like to talk.
Well, I could talk to you all day, but Tiffany Hift, you have things, you have patients to care for, so I will let you go. But this has been a delightful conversation.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your time.
Tiffany Haft offers a workshop on brain health in business. It's at the SDCEO West Women's Business Conference. That conference is March 12th at the Dakota Event Center in Aberdeen. Registration is open now. And that's our conversation for today. I hope that it served you from all of us here at SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.